Welcome back, everybody, into the CC Podcast. It is the morning of Thursday, December 21st here, as we get ready for the Louisville-Kentucky men's basketball game, which is set to tip off in about, 7 hours away from right now. Mike Rutherford here in Louisville, Kentucky. Dan Sinard is up in Columbus, Ohio. Our deepest and most sincere apologies for being away for a couple of weeks. The Rutherfords got strep throat. Merry Christmas there. That was fantastic. And then last week, I think we all were just kind of waiting to see. We didn't want the podcast to be totally invalidated right after we recorded. There were all the news swirling about what was going to happen, what may happen, what might not happen. And so we were just kind of waiting to have more information before we decided what we wanted to talk about, because basketball sort of felt secondary at that point. And now here we are. We have a game to talk about. We've got rumors about Kenny Payne to talk about. We've got an athletic story to talk about. We've got Jeff Brohm killing it in the transfer portal to talk about. Before we talk about any of that, though, got to say hello to Danny Sinard. How's pre-Christmas going for the Sinards right now up there in Columbus, Dan?
Yeah, we're getting prepared. I'm a big, like, last-minute procrastinator, shocker. So, I know everyone orders their gifts on Amazon nowadays. I feel like I'm still kind of the old school. I kind of like to go out and get stuff, even though it's probably ridiculous that I do that, but probably gonna do that, and then prepare for the root canal at 6 o'clock tonight.
Realistically, though, like, who do you shop for besides your wife?
Absolutely nobody.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I'm like making this a big deal, and like, she pretty much tells me what she wants, so it's not even that hard. I just, like, for some reason I like make it like a task, that shouldn't even be that hard. So it is what it is.
I do remember us going out to dinner like years ago around this time of the year. This was before like Mary and I had kids. And I think you had Cam, maybe Lila had just been born. And I was like, so what's the big present for the kids this year? And you were like, I'm going to be just as surprised as them. You were like, I've got no idea. Kim's handling it all. So it's you're not the only husband, I think, in that boat.
Last year, I literally was texting Mary for ideas. So
that's right.
That's what I do. I text other people, my friends' wives. I'm like, all right, what's in this year? She still wears the coat. Thank you, Mary.
She's a good gift giver for sure. Speaking of, it is your second child, your middle child, Lila's. It's her birthday, and I remember, I think we may have told the story on the podcast before. I know I tweeted about it, about how, like, you texted me in the middle of the night that you all were going to the hospital, and you were like, it's going to be a rivalry, baby, because the game, it was the same, like, the Louisville-Kentucky game was going to be that day. And we very quickly went from talking about your wife about to be having a child, giving birth to a child, to whether or not we thought Ryan McMahon was going to play in the Kentucky game. It was a simpler time where we were more excited about things like this.
Oh, 100%. I mean, one of my best memories as a father and a U of L fan was just sitting there with my newborn daughter, you know, sleeping on my chest while Quentin Snyder was putting Bam Adebayo on ice skates. A great moment. She's 7 today, which is hard to believe. So I think we're going to have to fit in some ice skating at some point. Shocker, not my strong suit. It should be a fun day.
It is weird. Like, that was the last time that we played the Kentucky game before Christmas. It was an eerily similar setup. It was a Thursday. Kind of odd start time. I remember coming home from radio quickly and realizing we'd hired somebody to paint our upstairs bathroom.
This story.
And like, I left. It was somebody from Mary's hometown who, I guess, like, big guy, but apparently had just had no interest in sports whatsoever. Had no idea the Louisville Kentucky game was going on. And I leave for radio and I'm like, he's got to be done by the time like the game starts, right? And Mary's like, oh yeah, like he'll be out of here by the time you get home. He's still there when I get home, and I'm like, fuck, like, this is going to be so weird. He stays upstairs the whole time. We're painting. And, I mean, it's me, Mary, and her sister, and I think maybe a couple other people were over here. And, I mean, it's a Louisville-Kentucky game. Like, we're screaming. We're yelling. Like, you know, we're like, fuck you, Calipari, like, the entire game. And this guy is upstairs just painting the bathroom and coming down periodically and being like, oh, I didn't realize that was a big game tonight. And I was like, yeah, I mean, it was kind of a wild thing, but props to Quentin Snyder, the legend, getting it done. The last time that we actually beat a a really good Kentucky team was that game. Maybe it'll happen again tonight. Doesn't seem very likely, but we'll get into all that. I mean, I guess that's as good a place to start as any. It feels weird. I mean, like I said, we're recording this late morning of game day. And I used to always say, like, there are a handful of days, they're like 3 days maybe, where you wake up and, like, it feels different from the get-go. You know it's a special day. You know something's going on. It's like Christmas, maybe Christmas Eve for some people, the Louisville-Kentucky football game, and then the Louisville-Kentucky men's basketball game was the biggest unofficial holiday in this city and this state. And the last 2 years, I can say this now because we're, like, living it right now, it just, like, that feeling, all those emotions that typically come with the game, that just the swirling of hatred and anxiety and excitement and, you know, just optimism, pessimism, everything, it's been totally absent the last couple of years. And as much as, like, it sucked getting ready for that game and sometimes going through that game, especially considering how much Kentucky's had their way with us in recent years, it's still, you felt alive. Like, this is one of the biggest parts about being a Louisville fan is this game and the build up to Christmas, the build up to New Year's. It was always about, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, okay, look, Kentucky just beat North Carolina or UK just lost to North Carolina. And how does this guy match up with that guy? And what's Cal going to do? And is this the year that Rick gets over the hump and all this stuff? And how big of a win would this be for our RPI? And this year and last year, it's just been, I feel like nothing. And I never thought that I would get to the point. We've had bad years before where you still get up for the Kentucky game because it's the Kentucky game, for God's sake. And I just never thought I'd get to a point where I'd wake up on game day and not be counting down the hours and all this stuff. And I sit here today and I feel next to nothing. I don't know. Maybe I'm not speaking for both of us. How are you when it comes to this?
Yeah. I mean, it feels like, and I can attest to this, it feels like when you have a huge exam and you have not studied one bit and you're about to walk in and you're like, this is going to be bad. This is going to be about as bad as it gets. That's kind of the dread I have going into this game, but I'm the same way as you. I mean, my favorite thing used to be like waking up and reading the Courier and like, they'd have like the matchups, like they'd have like the picture faces. It'd be like, oh my God, like Edgar Sosa's Garden, Ramel Bradley. Like, I think we got the advantage. And then, you know, you just kind of like play in your head, like how it's going to play out. But I mean, last year was one thing, like you said, it was kind of the same way. Like, I didn't really feel anything. I guess this one, there's even more dread, obviously, because it's at home and you know that their fan base is going to show up. And I mean, you know, let's just call it what it is. They're probably going to take over the arena, which I think that'll be the hardest part for me by far, watching this. But two, like last year, I didn't think Kentucky had a team that was really capable of doing anything. So like, I was like, yeah, we'll probably take our loss here. I don't think they're Final Four national title worthy. Like, I mean, they're bringing in a squad this year and it fucking sucks. Like, they have some real dudes. And, you know, with the state of our program, I just can't believe we've gotten to this point. So, yeah, I feel nothing, I guess, from like a passion standpoint, but I'm really, there's really nothing I'm looking forward to. And I'm just kind of dreading this 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock window tonight.
The other weird thing about this is, like, not only is there not a lot of optimism from the fan base, there's this whole feeling of like, even if we win, it's nothing outside of being just like super funny, like, you know, pointing and laughing at UK. Like, we would bring this game up all the time, understandably so. It would be like, no hyperbole, the biggest upset I think in the history of the rivalry, and it'd be great to point and laugh and say like, you guys couldn't beat Kenny Payne with this top 10 team and all that stuff. But it wouldn't, like, I think we are so far gone as a program right now that it wouldn't even like diametrically change any of the fan base's perception of Payne or the direction we're going in. I don't know. Maybe it would for some people, but I feel like, you know, we're what, like 272 in the net rankings or something like that. Even if we beat Kentucky tonight, we're not going to rise. And like, our NCAA tournament resume does not look good, even with a win over UK at home. Like, I don't think anybody would go from, hey, I think that we could actually be a top four team in the ACC now because we won this game. It would just kind of sit here as this sort of bizarre, silly one-off that is not really indicative of the way that things are going to go the rest of the Payne era. I mean, everybody is just so checked out on Payne and where we are right now as a program that I think the big interest in tonight's game is what happens next.
Like, yeah.
Like, I think that there's, you know, people ask me all the time, they have for the last couple of weeks, whether it's like, you know, friends or people that I'm walking the dog and stop me on the street, that they're like, you know, are you hearing anything? Well, what have you heard? And I'm like, I've heard hundreds of things. I don't know how much of it's true. I've kind of just had to gloss over and take all of it with a grain of salt. But everybody just wants to know what's next, because I think that we're all beyond sick of where we are as a program. We all are so ready for this to get back to being fun and for this to get back to feeling the way that it's supposed to, that we just want to know what that next step is. Even if it means it's, hey, we're riding this thing out, 3 months left of Kenny Payne, and then we'll make a decision after that. Or if it's, you know, we're getting rid of Payne, we're promoting Danny Manning or Nolan Smith, or we're getting rid of everybody and we're bringing this interim new staff. People just kind of want to know, because they're sick of what's been happening. The attendance numbers are, I mean, I don't think we've talked since the last couple of basketball games, but you know, you've seen, we had like 4,200 people at the Pepperdine game, which is just, it's embarrassing, but it's also consistent with where we've been as a program. The DePaul game was an absolute clusterfuck. It's people are just, they're just ready for change. And I don't know if it happens after this game tonight. I don't know if it happens, you know, in a couple of days. I will say, because this is a question everybody's asked. We asked for questions on Twitter. I think most people want this answered. Like, what do you think's going to happen? And I said last week, when there were rumors swirling about, you know, surely after the Arkansas State game, they're not going to let him coach the Pepperdine game, or surely they're going to fire him after the Pepperdine game. And I said, from everything that I've heard and from what makes sense, just looking at the logistics here, they're not going to fire him before the UK game, because what sense does it make to let him coach against Pepperdine and then bring in an interim for like 3 days before you play Kentucky? Like, you don't do that. And when you look at the way our schedule lays out, the only thing that makes sense is after Kentucky, you've got the holidays, players can go home, be with their families. We've got 13 days between games. We've got 13 days between Kentucky on December 21st and then Virginia on January 3rd. So if there is a move that's going to be made in season, you assume it would be after UK, where Josh Hurd can go to the players and say, look, we recognize this is a shitty situation. We're going to let you guys go home for the holidays. If you want to check out and spend your next semester elsewhere or sitting out or you know, just kind of reevaluating your basketball life, we understand. That's fine. For everybody else, go home, come back. We're going to have a new coach, maybe a new interim staff, and then we're going to try to make the most out of this ACC season. Like, that makes sense to me. And I mean, I've heard enough to think that getting rid of everybody on the staff is a very realistic possibility. It's also the one, I don't know how you feel. I would feel more comfortable at this point just cleaning house and not promoting Manning or promoting Nolan Smith or promoting Josh Jamison. I would just like, hey, let's all new guys, let's just try to see if we can get the fan base back, rally around the players, and make the most out of these 3 months. What would your preferred next step be?
I would like to name Josh Jamison our next head coach for the next 10 years.
I wouldn't hate it. Why not?
No.
Maybe he's a basketball savant and just nobody knows it.
Yeah, like the ultimate clipboard holder.
He's like Nate from Ted Lasso, where it's like, if you just give him a chance,
yeah,
he's gonna become a genius.
I'm in the same boat as you. I would like to just go ahead and clean house if possible. And just kind of start with a fresh slate for, you know, and who knows what's going to happen with the players, you know, after this, if this all does go down, you know, are we going to keep the team intact, or some guys going to already opt to transfer? I mean, that's why there's so many moving parts to this, and I don't know. I guess my question for you is, has Josh Hurd let this drag on? I mean, geez, I say drag on. It's only been a, you know, 1 year and 10 games, but it's been such an utter disaster.
Yeah.
Has he let it drag on so much that, like, we have lost some fans for good, regardless if we, you know, do the right thing and let him go and bring in? I guess it kind of depends on who the hire is, but I just think the program is in such a state of despair You know, even when we do bring somebody in new, I think it's been running to the ground so much. It's going to take a lot to get some of these fans back. You know, I think like the diehards, obviously, you know, they're going to ride through it no matter what. But, you know, the casuals who maybe don't follow it every single dying breath like we do, it's going to be hard to get them back. And I just wonder if this is just dragged on too long.
I think you're exactly right, to be honest. And I hate saying that because I think it's a minority opinion. I think that you and I, like, we are on the opposite end of what most Louisville fans think. I think there's a sense, just from talking to people and you know, seeing the texts that come into my radio show on a daily basis, that if we just hire the right guy, he can turn things around immediately, and boom, we're back to being Louisville basketball. Everybody's back in. Downtown is jumping again, and the fan base is back. And I do think that so much harm has been done that it's going to take more than that. Like, I think it's going to take a decent period of sustained success to get things back to, you know, within shouting distance of where it was. And case in point, like, I mean, we were dealing with a little bit of, you know, losing the fan base even before this all happened. You know, the 2019-20 team with Chris Mack that was number one in the country at one point and, you know, was poised to be like a 3 or a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. Like, their home attendance numbers were, it was still like 16,000 per game. Like, it was a far cry from where we had been as a program when things were rolling with Rick Pitino, or back in the day when Denny was here at Freedom Hall. Like there was still a little bit of, you know, we'd lost some of the fan base because of everything that had happened off the court. And I think that some more people have checked out. And then you had fans that were, you know, kind of not okay with the scandals, but who were like, whatever, like I'm a diehard through and through, who have been so upset with the losing that they've checked out a little bit. It's going to take a while, like, I think, to get things back to where we expect them to be. And the first step is obviously either Kenny Payne turns it around, which I think is a very, very long shot, or we bring in somebody who can get this thing kind of rolling from a win-loss perspective pretty quickly. And then, you know, we see. But I think you're right. I think you've also, a point that I've made a ton of times is you've kind of lost a heavy chunk of one of the next generations of fans. You talk about, you know, like, I think about my nephews who are, one of them's in college and two of them are in high school now. You know, Patrick Ryan, who we've worked with at the radio station, his dad Dugan runs it. He talked about how, like, the last time that we won an NCAA tournament game, or the last time that we won multiple NCAA tournament games, like, he was like 7 years old, and he's in college now. It's just like, there are a lot of kids that in those formative sports years, ages like 10 through 17, 18, have experienced nothing but scandal and losses. And it's tough to be a diehard fan when that's the case. And so, yeah, I do think that that's a realistic concern right now.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I consider me and you, this was our life growing up. I mean, I'm not saying it still isn't, but it's pretty sad. Like, I mean, I don't even know who our leading scorer is. Like, tonight, like, JJ Trainer, I would say, is one, you know, not that we have a ton of integral, like, important pieces, but I mean, as far as the team goes, like, I would say he's maybe someone or one of the more important ones. I have no idea if he's playing. I don't know if Dennis Evans is playing. Like, you know, I'm so just checked out right now. Like, I just never in my life. And I think I've heard every single U of L fan utter the same thing. Like, I never in my life thought we would be at this point. And how many times have we said, like, man, this is rock bottom. But I have a feeling tonight could literally be rock bottom, because this could be the end. And then, you know, after that, then maybe, for my sake, hopefully, you know, some changes are made moving forward. But I don't know. It's going to be a rough 2 hours.
This started as a joke. I think the first person I saw who said something about this was our guy, Doctor of Dunk, on Twitter. But the more that I've talked about this, the more that I've kind of expanded upon this idea, the more that I realistically want it to happen is, if we fire Kenny Payne after tonight, if we fire the staff after tonight, what about like a daily show situation where we just bring in a new coach every week? I think this is the best way to make the most out of the next 3 months. Is like, you got a lot of coaches out there who are on the sidelines. We give Josh Pastner a week. He comes in with a shield. He coaches some games. We give Tom Crean a week. We give, Coach K, if he wants to be involved, Coach K gets a week. We can give
Mike Szabo.
Mike Szabo, high school coaches, we can give them a week. We bring back Andre McGee. We call it Hate Week. We Fan Appreciation Week. We draw one fan's name. They get to coach for a week. The fans can, like, you know, during timeouts, get to call what type of defense we want to play. Do we want to press? Do we want a zone? Do we want, you know, vote on your phones. And the winner, that's how we're going to come out and play. Like, let's make the most of it. Let's have fun. You can't tell me if we did that attendance numbers wouldn't be sky high. We'd be the most watched team in college basketball. Everybody would be tuning in every game. It wouldn't matter who we played. There would be a lot of attention on Louisville basketball for a semi-positive thing. And people are like, well, that's not fair to the players. It's not, you know, the players deserve like I watched the players come out against New Mexico State and act like they didn't give a shit for 40 minutes and lose by 12 points against a 3-17 that's ranked ninth in the Sun Belt. So, you know, maybe if they want to improve their own images, they can play hard for whoever's coaching them. So, like, that's – I still love this idea. Coach every week for the rest of the next 3 months. We make the most of it. We have some fun. And then we hire, hopefully, our next forever coach, and Louisville basketball's back rolling.
All I can picture is you get chosen as a head coach, and like someone checks out of the game, like Brand Huntley Hatfield, you reach out for the high five, and he goes for the throw your towel like right in your face. Like, that actually happened to me in high school. Anyways, yeah, you like come back.
You want playboys, and I'm getting the fuck out of here.
You come out of halftime, you have like a black eye. You're like, yeah, no, my just talk strategy in there, and I think we're good to go second half.
I wanted to play a 1-3-1. They had some different ideas. That's fine.
Yeah, I know. Like, you know, everyone's talking about like, well, what if we got Padgett and like Peyton Siva, and you know, dude. I mean, at this point, I would like it. I think it would be fine. This year, it's a lost cause, and unfortunately, you know, for the kids, it's a lost cause. But it really is just, it's going to come down to who we actually hire next. But yeah, for the rest of this year, I mean, I say try to make it as kind of lighthearted as and fun as possible, and see what happens.
We bring in Andre McGee and he like wins the ACC tournament. And we're like, well,
this is awkward.
What do we do here? Do we just keep this thing rolling? As far as David Padgett, I got tipped off that David Padgett, who's now coaching, I believe, at Low Elementary, lost his first game this season by a score of 54-1. And I texted him. I'm like, is this true? This is what I'm hearing. And he was like, my kids just got to fight harder. You know, we got tricked. No, I did have to tell him that I was moving him down my interim coach rankings. You know, you can't be losing games by 53 at the fourth grade level if you want to be our interim. So David's got to step it up.
Tough look there, Dave.
I love it, Dave. I love David. Would love to have him back. If you want to see him for the team, sure. then yeah, I'm good with that. I mean, realistically, is there any hope for you whatsoever that we're going to keep this thing semi-competitive tonight?
The only thing that kind of caught my eye was the spread was moving down yesterday.
It's like 13.5, I think.
Yeah, I think it started at 14.5. So, I don't know. These games get weird. Like, I feel like most of the time it's never fluid basketball. But it's usually the reason that happens is because like the environment is absolutely so charged up that like these kids, it's like, I mean, how many like really good UofL UK games with like top 10 teams or top 15 teams that we played? And then like after the first 4 minutes, like it looks like neither team has ever dribbled a basketball in their life. Yeah. Like it's just, these games get kind of clunky. So I could see it getting a little bit weird. But I don't think there's any chance we win. Could we keep it close? Yeah, I wouldn't put it past them, but I would lean the opposite.
I mean, it would be weird if, like, because I think that there's a general sense that if we get blown out, and it's every worst, you know, Louisville fans' worst nightmare that we've got 75% UK fans in there. It sounds like a UK home game. They just blow us the fuck out. And it sounds like if that does wind up being the case, there's a good chance that we're dealing with a coaching change. I think if he wins, it's like, well, this is super awkward. Do you fire Kenny Payne after a 2-game winning streak, including a win over UK? I don't think that happens. But if it's semi-close and you lose by like 7, you know, does that change things? I think the only answer that I've got is I feel very confident now that there are only one of two roads that we're going to go down as far as the rest of the season's concerned. I think either he's fired in the next 48 hours or he coaches the rest of the season. Because I don't think that you don't just like keep him around for that 2 week period where we don't have a game and then we, you know, turn the page to 2024 and try to, you know, start anew and all that stuff. You don't keep him around and then fire him like 3 weeks later because we lost a conference game against Virginia. Like, you know, the situation's bad. You know, it's probably not going to get better if you're keeping him for those 13 days. So I think they're just going to ride it out if he's not fired soon. So like, that's what, you know, it's what we're keeping an eye on. This has the potential to be a very eventful, like 48-hour period. And look, and just to ease the fears of everybody out there listening, if he does get fired at some point, whether it's tomorrow, tonight, you know, Saturday, we'll do a podcast. We'll come on. We'll talk about it for sure. And we'll talk about what's next for the program. But like, I don't think anybody really knows exactly like what Josh Hurd's thinking. It's very clear that he's thought this out. I mean, people are talking about his silence here and you know, why haven't we heard from Josh and we need to hear from him. I think the silence speaks volumes. I think if he was going to talk, what would he say outside of giving Kenny Payne a vote of confidence? You know, giving him the, like, I've got the last time that he was asked to say something, he came out and he was like, I've got all the faith in the world in Kenny and he's laid out a vision for me. Like, he's not going to come out and be like, yeah, this guy sucks. You know, we're going to get rid of him in a couple of days. Just be patient. Like, that's just not going to happen. So I think the fact that he hasn't talked in any sort of public forum, it says to me that he is, you know, he's aware of the situation. He's ready to act if he feels like the situation calls for it. And like to me, I think that's a bigger thing than if he were talking.
One last thing. I agree with everything you said earlier about like the whole timing. You know, we have 13 days off. Do you really want to bring in an interim staff, you know, for the Kentucky game and have that be their first game? Like, I totally get that. The part I don't get, like, are we really basing what happens tonight, like, should be the outcome for Kenny for the rest of the year? I mean, have we not seen enough proof? Like, have we not seen the Lenoir Ryan or Kentucky Wesleyan or whatever? Like, is it really like, oh, well, let's see what happens tonight, you know? I mean, to me, I've seen enough. Like, it is what it is. Could something happen tonight and we win? I can't even say yes. Like, I just don't see it happening. But if it did, then I guess that maybe you have like a conversation. But I think any loss tonight, even if it's a last second buzzer beater, you're like, well, they are showing improvement. Like, I mean, I've seen enough. I don't know. That's just my opinion.
To be fair, like, you know, we're about to talk about this athletic story that came out today, and Josh did talk to Brendan Quinn of The Athletic for some. He gave some quotes there, and he did say like explicitly, like, I'm not basing my decision off of one game.
That's true.
Like, yeah, you know, he's, and I don't think like when I'm talking about waiting for the UK game, I'm not saying like waiting to see what's going to happen in the UK game. I think it's just the timing of the deal. If you're going to bring in an entire new staff, which is that, look, that's the big rumor out there, is that it's not going to be, we're promoting Nolan, we're promoting Danny, we're promoting everybody. It's everybody's gone and we're bringing in like five new coaches. If that is the case, like, you can't just do that in the middle of like where you've got 2 days off, especially when the Kentucky game's the one that's looming. So like, you know, there were among the many rumors that I heard, you get people texting me like, hey, the team's been informed that if they lose to Pepperdine, he's gone. And that's why they're playing so hard. And the team's been informed that if they, you know, if they beat New Mexico State, they can save his job. And I don't think that it was that's ever been the situation.
Exactly. I don't think an athlete, I mean, they would never have that sort of situation where they put that on the players either.
I don't think so. But like you said, though, I think the one wrench that could get thrown in is like, can you really fire him after they beat Pepperdine by 22, the largest win margin of victory that he's had here? And then they beat Kentucky. Like that would be, I think then they would ride it out. I really do. But anything less than that, I would not be shocked at all.
Imagine if we did can him after a win, like the ammo for the KP supporters. Oh my God. I don't think we'd ever hear the end of it.
It would be so U of L too, to finally get all of our ducks in a row and then actually do this after the biggest win that we've had in the rivalry in a long time.
There would be a civil war in our fan base.
There really would. It would be terrible. All right, let's talk about this athletic story more in depth, because, first of all, have you read it that came out this morning?
Yes.
Yeah, so Brendan Quinn, who's I think one of the, if not the best college basketball writer right now going nationally. He does really good investigative pieces. He does really good just profile pieces. He's really thorough. And so he came to town. He talked to all the necessary people. He said that Kenny Payne was not made available to him for this story. So he doesn't have quotes from Kenny Payne. But he talks about, you know, all the stuff going on with the program, all the usual things you're going to. I think the more interesting thing, the most interesting part of the story to me is when he gets into just what a disaster the Caron Davis stuff was, which I think you could tell from the outside that this was poorly handled. Seeing it from the insider's perspective just reinforces that times two. One, we find out that the long talked about the infamous dust up between Caron Davis and Kenny Payne. It did happen. It was not a physical altercation, which was the rumor. It was a kind of a verbal back and forth that got very heated, according to the story. And look, Quinn did talk to Caron Davis. He talked to players on the team who spoke under the degree of anonymity. He said that Kenny Payne basically told my teammates, Caron said, fuck all y'all. And then things escalated from there, but never turned physical. And after that point, his status with the team was limited. He was still part of the program. He had access to the facilities. He remained enrolled. He had occasional individual workouts with the coaches. And then teammates had no idea what were going on. Like, is he part of the team? Is Quinn has a current player who is quoted as saying it was so weird how they handled it, which was obvious to everybody. The whole Kenny Payne being like, he's not in trouble. He's still a member of the team. Oh, he was at the Bellarmine game. I didn't know that. It was such a bizarre situation. And apparently on multiple occasions, players went to Kenny Payne advocating for Caron Davis and saying, we want him to rejoin the team. We think he can be a valuable player. We don't think this is fair. And Kenny just didn't, was having nothing of it, kept him like this. And then you had the debacle 8 days ago where Louisville puts out the statement saying, he's come to us and he wants to transfer. And Davis is saying himself, I never said that. I don't want to transfer. I want to be here. And then Louisville's like, okay, you're right. We were lying. He's off the team. Just a complete bungling of a situation. And Kenny Payne has been this guy who's saying, despite all the on the court failures, I'm here for the players. I'm loving them up. We got to be a family. And this feels like he fucked Caron Davis. He left him out to dry. I know maybe his intentions were good. He says he was trying to protect the player. The way that he handled it, and he had to have had people around him telling him this is not the best way to deal with this, was just so, so ridiculously bad. And I think fully indicative of this entire 15-month period of time, or 21-month period of time with Payne at the helm of the program.
No doubt. The optics do not look great from everything you read in that article. I will say this. If we're even mediocre or winning a little bit, I don't think this is nearly the story, just because, the reason it's such a big story is we didn't hit the transfer portal. We didn't get proven players. Kenny reaches out to an unknown JUCO transfer that, unfair to this kid, is going to possibly have to play a huge part in not only saving Louisville's season, but possibly Kenny's job. So I think the fans are super anxious to see this kid. We see bits and pieces of him from the red-white scrimmage. Obviously, he's not even close to being a contributor from what we saw. And the fact that now we have all this and it's got so, I don't even want to say blown out of proportion, but it's just gotten so big and so, there's been so much turmoil with it. It's just, it's Kenny's own doing by, not bringing in the right guys first off, but two, just from everything you read in that story, it's, I don't know. He, both off the court and on the court, it just sounds like things are spiraling out of control quickly.
I think the bigger thing when it comes to the Davis situation is, last year was so, when you go 4-28 at a place like Louisville, the fan base kind of, especially when you're a first year head coach who's never done this before, they want to know why. How could this possibly have happened? We had the debates all year long. Was it the players? Is it the coaches? And when you don't have anything to fall back on, this man's never been a head coach before. So we can't look at the results on the floor and say, yeah, but he took you know, UCLA to a Final Four. He took Alabama to a Final Four. Like we know he can coach. We know we can get it done. So there's got to be something else going on here. Stories like this, I think, reinforce the fan base's worst fear, which is that this guy just has no idea what the fuck he's doing.
Yeah.
And it's because it seems like that from the outside. And you want to say, surely there's more going on here. Surely it just can't be that simple. And then you see things like the handling of this particular situation, and you're like, oh, he just doesn't know what he's doing. And that's the long and short of it, and we need to move on. And, I mean, the fact that you've got a player on the team who's willing to talk about this is also,
yep.
That's like, imagine any other major coach, like imagine one of the 10 best coaches in college basketball having that happen. Like, that's just another piece of evidence that, like, this is not going to work. The other part of the story that I think has stood out to fans, and this is something I've said on the podcast repeatedly, like it may seem to you like, you know, all the other former players, everybody who's ever played at U of L is fully supportive of Kenny Payne. They're very vocal. Like I said in the podcast, like there are a number of former players who are more than willing to say that they don't want to do it publicly because, you know, what good does that do? But there are a lot of players that have reached out to me that have talked to me and who are like, this is not good. Like this is terrible. This is beyond a disaster. This has to get solved very quickly. And this story reinforces that. You've got multiple players speaking to Quinn again under the umbrella of anonymity, saying like, this is terrible. Sad is the word that comes to my mind. He says, by now, I would guess that 95% of the fan base has given up on this working, and it's hard to argue. The negativity is overwhelming. Peyton Siva did speak with his name, and Peyton's been very supportive. He knows the players. He's worked out with the players. I think he's there for them. And he talks about Louisville and says, you know, when it's going great, they show you love. When it's going bad, some people make it tough, which I think is accurate. You know, it's just like this feels like we know where this is going. Like there's nobody out there anymore that's holding on to any sort of belief that this can be a successful tenure. I mean, even if let's say we win tonight or we lose a close game and Kenny keeps his job and rides it out. Like there's nobody out there who's saying, I think Kenny Payne can win national titles here anymore, which is the goal. When you hire a guy at a place like Louisville, we don't need to read off the stats. We know where we are in the net rankings. We know where we are in KenPom. It's been beyond the disaster that I thought it might be when we hired him. It's been beyond everybody's worst case scenario, everybody's worst fears. And it's at this point, with us needing something to get excited about, I feel like it can't end soon enough. That's where I stand on this.
Nope. I mean, like you said, unmitigated disaster. I don't think any of us as a fan base could have prepared for it. Still mind-boggling that we didn't make any staff changes. Like, of course Kenny doesn't know how to handle anything like this. He's never been a head coach, and we have, I mean, yeah, Danny Manning, I guess, but God, I'm probably going to take heat for that one, but it just seems like no one really knows what they're doing over there. At least that's the outside perspective. But like you said, can't end soon enough. We got players talking to media, you know, anonymously. Like, one thing you said, like, yeah, some people might believe, like, there's a bunch of U of L, you know, former basketball players are in support of Kenny. I think from, like, a personal standpoint, like, everyone wants, you know, they wanted to see Kenny do well. I think the majority, if I had to guess, a majority of the former players probably know, like, this is going awful, you know, just like it said in the article, like, this is the end. I think the only ones we're hearing out loud is a small fraction, and I think we know who those guys are. We don't have to bring their names up, but they're just the loud ones. I think a majority know, like, hey, this isn't working.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where we are at this point. Now the question is, it's all around what comes next. What do we do? Where do we go? And that's
By the way, and I'm not throwing this guy under the bus. The Bozich thing is so weird, like. I don't know.
We're going to get there. We have a question we'll talk about during the Q&A session. The last thing that I do want to bring up before we get to the questions that people sent in. the Kenny Payne presser yesterday, which, I mean, every time he goes to the mic, it's oh no. Like it feels like it's happening in slow motion, and you want to, like, the best way I could describe it is, you know, if you've got, and you know, your kids are older than mine, so you've probably had experience with this. Like, if you've got a kid that's doing something that maybe they're not great at, and you know, it's a piano recital, and you've heard them fuck up in your house like time and time again, and like you're just watching them in front of all these people go out there, and you're like, okay, good. Oh no. Like, that's how every press conference goes. It gets away from him so quick. I mean, him bringing back up the I just want to win by 1 point line is just like, what it played terribly the last time. What are you doing? You know, he comes out. If anybody didn't hear the quote, he says, you know, I know John wants to come out there and steamroll me. I know he wants to kill me. I just want to beat him by 1 point. And it's like, what fucking rivalry have you been living in? Have you been watching your entire life? Like, this is not the way that this works. Yes, Calipari, who I'm sure, you know, considers you a dear friend and loves you, his feelings for you do not overwhelm his feelings for Louisville and his understanding of what the fan base wants him to do against their arch rivals. He wants to win this game by 35 points. And the fact that you don't is just more evidence that you just to use your quote from Austin Powers, Dr. Evil, you just don't get it, do you? Like, it's just this is the way it feels.
Yeah. I mean, even if he thinks that,
like, just don't say it.
Just keep it in your head, for the love of Christ. Like, I mean, people just want to take whatever you say and run. You have to know that by now. You've had about 8 fuck-ups in a row in press conferences. Like, if you have something in your head like that, especially that you got heat for last year, I mean, Jesus, just keep it to yourself. So that part, when this is all over, like, you know, I'm going to need someone that's like, it's sad. Like, obviously I want someone to coach and bring passion back to the team, the fan base. I'm also probably going to need someone that's a little polished beyond the mic. Like, I don't know if I could keep doing stuff like this year after year.
I mean, I think things that I can't say every single day, and it's so easy just not to say. It's why I'm still married. It's why I still have a radio show. Like, it's so easy to just not say everything that comes to your mind. Like, just don't say it. Like, you know, the worst was the Tyler Johnson tights, where he's like, I probably shouldn't say this. And I was like, oh my God, if he's having to preface a statement with that, you know, it's going to be bad. I don't know what he's about to say, but I can only imagine it's going to be something that we're all going to wish he didn't. And boy, was it. It's so bad. And I mean, who knows how this is going to go tonight after the game when he comes to the mic, but I've got some ideas. All right, we're going to take some questions from you guys here. We'll end with a little bit of football talk, and I know we're running a little bit late. But before we do that, reminding you about our friends at Home Field Apparel that bring you this podcast. Home Field Apparel, the perfect timing to hype up Home Field Apparel. They just released today a brand new Denny Crum shirt, which is fantastic.
If you want to get the
fan base hyped about something right now, it's think about the past. Think about the good times. And they've got a Cool Hand Luke Denny Crum shirt that's available. Probably a little bit late to get it for Christmas, but maybe in a New Year's gift, a late Christmas gift. Go to homefieldapparel.com, shop their Louisville section. If you want to shop other schools, they've got like 175 of them now. Use our promo code CHRONICLE15 at checkout. It'll save you 15% off your first purchase. Homefield Apparel, follow them on their social media channels as well to keep up with their latest releases. You can sign up for their newsletter, which will also keep you abreast of everything they've got going on. Homefieldapparel.com, promo code CHRONICLE15 at checkout. We love our guys at Homefield. All right, let's take some questions. I'll start with the one, since you already kind of led into it. This is a local news person who wished to be kept anonymous, who just wanted us to talk about the question was specifically and straightforwardly, what's going on with Rick Bozich? And Dan, I'll let you field this one.
I mean, here's the deal. I don't want to throw Bozich under the bus, because I feel like I almost grew. I mean, like, if you lived in Louisville for the past 25 years, it's like you've kind of grown up with this guy. Did I agree with a lot of stuff you wrote? Like, probably I disagreed with more than I agreed with, but I you know, did respect him along the way. Like, I think he, you know, worked hard at his job, but at the same time, I mean, the shit that's going on and the shit pumping he's doing for Kenny Payne right now, I don't think I've ever seen it with like a local, you know, journalist. It's sad to watch. I'm like, I get that he's your friend, but holy shit. Like, these couldn't be more fucking slanted. Like, if, you know, I was writing something good about my wife, like it's truly unbelievable. Like how, he's trying to push the Kenny Payne narrative on us.
It's strange. And look, I don't know Rick really at all. Like I've never met him. I did hear a long time ago that he was not a big fan of mine, which is fine. I'm not for everybody. That's okay. But like you said, like I did grow up where, you know, it was him and Crawford. It was him and Pat Forty writing columns for the Courier Journal when the CJ columnist was the biggest sports job in the city. And so he is, you know, a local person of significant note. And it's kind of crazy that like when I was coming up, there was this big kind of outrage from people like Bozich who you know were like, this is, you know, cheerleader media is ridiculous, fans posing as media and getting attention for it is outrageous. And then of course you had for the longest time Kentucky fans saying that Tom Jurich owned the media and he was telling everybody what to do and he wouldn't let you on if you were going to say certain things. And now you've got Rick Bozich is doing all the things that like the big J journalism people were accusing us of doing back in the day, which is just insane to me. He's deleting all of his tweets that are outwardly supportive of Kenny Payne that look silly in hindsight. It's a wild thing to see for sure. I don't know how else to put it. It's strange. There's no way around it. Let's see here. Let's take some questions. Let me scroll back to the beginning here. A lot of questions, not surprisingly. Sean Vincel, who does Hoops Insight, he's great follow for Louisville or Kentucky basketball fans, says, which of these three do you miss the most and want to return to U of L basketball first? Fan passion and engagement, winning over Kentucky, or top 25 expectations and relevancy?
Without sounding like I'm not passionate about the Kentucky game, because I am. Like, I just miss caring. So I think I'd put passion within the fan base one. I'd put top 25 expectations two and Kentucky three.
I'd put top 25 expectations first, because I think with that, the other two things can come. I just miss being nationally relevant in good ways when it comes to college basketball. Like last weekend was one of the best weekends that we've had for a college basketball season in December ever. Like, you know, you had all these top 25 versus top 25 games, you know, Arizona, Purdue, Kentucky, Carolina. Like, it was just a loaded weekend. And for us to be focused on, hey, we're playing Pepperdine and are we going to fire our head coach? It's so depressing to just not be part of the game. We're not involved at all. So I miss top 25 expectations. I'll put fan passion and engagement second. I think that will come with us getting back to being a perennial top 25 team. And then, yeah, I'll put win over Kentucky third, just because, look, it sucked when we were losing to Kentucky when Rick Pitino was here, but, you know, still going to Final Fours and playing for national titles and being right in the mix. It wasn't like we just checked out because we were losing to Kentucky in late December, early January. State of Louisville says, favorite hole at Crescent Hill. I did shout out to everybody who did the PGA championship ticket giveaway thing last week, where I made people go to Crescent Hill and take a picture at the first tee box. It was all seeing the submissions made my holiday. Like some of the funniest ones. And I think our guy Nathan Snyder actually won the ticket. So props to you. My favorite hole at Crescent Hill is, what is it? I think it's five is the downhill par five, where like when you're growing up, it's like, oh my God, this is the longest hole ever. And you wake up and you realize that's a very short hole. All you have to do is not hit into the trees on your first tee shot. But I do remember birdieing that hole. And these two guys that we were playing with when I was young, and we played with these two, my brother and I played, and we got paired up with these two like very nice Asian guys. And they called me Birdie Man the entire round after I made the birdie. And I was like, this is great. Like, I love these guys. These guys are fantastic. But I'll remember those guys forever. But it was that hole. I mean, like, one of my first birdies was awesome.
I want to say seven that, like, goes along the road, like, right before the par three eighth. That's, like, straight uphill.
It's a long hole, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Just visually, I kind of like that hole. But, yeah, Crescent Hill, that's where I feel like Crescent Hill is where I went from like a little boy playing golf to like actually like hitting irons in the air for the first time, and I was like, holy shit, like, this is kind of cool. But yeah, I think definitely a special place in Louisville.
Let's see. U of L Sports News says, would you trade the football team making a CFP appearance next year if it means you have to endure a third year of Kenny Payne? I think I would.
So would I.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I right would. Now, like, and it's a big deal. We are 100%, like, and the article even said it, like, we are a basketball-driven city, no doubt. But there's no doubt right now that, like, football right now is king, and the college football playoff is, I mean, people are just salivating over this. And to know that you might be, you know, in the first playoff, that would just be something that I couldn't pass up.
Same. I think it'd be the equivalent of, like, if the football program was where it was with Bobby in 2018, where, like, we're getting blown out every week and all this stuff, and it was like, would you trade one more year of that shit for, like, a basketball national title? I'd be like, yeah, sure, of course. Like, making the playoff would be a huge deal next year. It'd be great for the program. We'd keep all this positive momentum that we have. So, yeah, I think that you have to make that trade. As much as it would suck, I think we'd be like, all right, one more year, we can do it. Let's move on.
Yeah, we're also probably, even if we bring in a new coach next year, I'm not saying we're, I mean, depending on who it is, we have no idea, but I don't think they're going to be able to perform a miracle of, like, getting us in the Elite Eight or Final Four on the first year, is my guess.
You never know. It can, like, Jerome Tang did it last year at K-State with a team that was last in the league. Iowa State went from a 2-win season to the Sweet 16. It could happen, but I think your scenario is far more likely. Connor Shea says, why on earth would the three wise men bring silver and gold to help a child that's shivering in the night? How's that supposed to help? It's a selfish dick move. Like, you're trying to show off, you're trying to show off your cool presence. The baby can't use that. The family, they're staying in a goddamn manger, like, at an inn. Like, they need some help. They need, bring some blankets, bring something else. It's a dick move for sure.
There's a TikTok out there. Like, this lady, she, like, acts like she's doing, like, a live Facebook, but she's like Mary from like the manger. She's like, all right, we'll be on in a second, like, quiet down, Jesus. Like, I don't know if you see this on TikTok. it's like absolutely hilarious. Anyways, go ahead.
Sounds great.
No, I know that. Quite, I was like, I should have come prepared better with an explanation. Now I'm gonna have to tweet out this lady's TikTok. Damn it.
Kara says, Mike, what the actual fuck? I'll hang up and listen. Yeah, I think we're all there. James says, if Kenny Payne were a local municipal golf course, which would he be? Same question for Jeff Brom. Jeff Brom's Crescent Thrill. The thrill's the best. Kenny Payne
golf
is,
world.
I was going to say golf world, but literally, hopefully he goes the way of golf world very soon.
Do you know I worked at golf world for one day? Literally,
you did?
I worked there for one day. And I realized quickly... like, this is gonna be the worst job ever. But yeah, shout out golf world.
I did not know that. I've never heard that story. Southern Card says, SEC, Big 12, or Big 10, and what time is the Kenny Payne fired presser tomorrow, and will there be an emergency pod if we beat UK or if KP is let go? Yeah, I think if either of those things happen, we'll have to do a podcast. If we beat UK, you'll hear from us again tonight. If we fire Kenny Payne tomorrow, you'll hear from us tomorrow. But as far as, like, conference, where we might, I mean, the Big 12 feels like the only option if we're going to go somewhere.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, what if Josh Hurd fired him on Christmas morning?
He's like,
Christmas, like, news drop.
He's bragging about, like, they put out, like, they do all these promotional videos now where it's like, surprise for the fan base. Josh is like, got an extra gift for everybody on this Christmas morning. He's gone.
I won't let my kids open their gifts till we do our emergency pod. I'm like, stay upstairs. I'm still working.
Santa didn't come yet.
Oh, man.
Danimal says, is Zan Payne the anonymous source? It'd be hilarious if he was. We have a person who's texted the radio show every day this week about how Zan Payne's the X factor in this game. He's like, he's familiar with the Kentucky system. He's not going to let them know what they're doing. Like, the texts have been very funny all week, but yeah, it's Zan season for sure. Let's see. Dustin says, where are we expecting to be next year in ACC football standings after this season's success and the fantastic incoming class? I mean, I think that there's a realistic shot of us, you know, being back in that fighting for a trip to the conference championship, being in the top four of the league. I think that's going to kind of be the expectation.
Do we have Clemson and Florida State next year?
We have Clemson. We play at Clemson. We do not play Florida State.
We have Clemson, Notre Dame, Kentucky.
We play Georgia Tech and Miami again because we do that every year, and Virginia. We play at Stanford, which is kind of crazy. I can't remember who the other games that we have off the top of my head are.
Gotcha. I mean, like, obviously from what we've brought in from the transfer portal, I mean, it's hard not to just be giddy about everything. But at the same time, you know, it's different than like having, you know, being like an Alabama or a Michigan or whoever, where they have five-star kids come in year after year and they're able to kind of, you know, build this culture. And, you know, by the time it's their turn to produce like their sophomore, junior year, they know the system. Like, we really got to, you know, dump a lot of info on these guys throughout the whole off season. They got to come together. Plus the schedule might be obviously a little bit tougher than it was this year.
Yeah, the non-con schedule next year is Austin Peay, Jacksonville State, who's the replacement for Indiana, at Notre Dame, who we find out officially Riley Leonard is going to be their quarterback next year, and then at Kentucky. ACC, we're on the road against Boston College, Clemson, Stanford, and Virginia. We're home against Georgia Tech, Miami, Pitt, and SMU. So, it does kind of feel like the schedule sort of falls our way again.
Yeah.
To where we could be 6-2, 7-1, maybe 8-0. But that, I mean, at Clemson will be, they're not going to be that down again. They'll be better next year. That'll be a tough game for sure. And then everybody else, we'll see. You never know who's going to be good from one year to the next now in the ACC, because transfer portal changes things. Let's see here. I lost track. Elliot Lane says, how much does the rivalry even mean anymore? We haven't won in men's basketball or football in years. It means less and less the longer we fail to compete, and it feels like our players don't care. Well, first of all, we did win in basketball just two games ago, so it's not like it's been like 17 years. It just feels like it because it was that COVID season and UK was terrible. But football, I mean, I think we found out this year firsthand, like, just because we'd lost four in a row, that loss still, I think it's still painful. I think it's still stinging the fan base. Like, the rivalry still matters for sure, and that's not going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, the football game, that outcome like changed the national landscape of what happened in the college football playoff. But yeah, I mean, I think from a fan passion standpoint, obviously in football, I think it's as high as it's been in basketball. I mean, it is what it is right now. But I think when we get a coach in here that can at least turn around and make us respectable, I think you'll see it pick back up.
Ryan Hurley says, will you throw your name in the hat to be interim head coach? I think a CC podcast coaching staff would be like us two and then like three of the people that send in tweets.
Yeah. I mean, first off, we would run zone. Like, we would be a 2-3 zone team. 100. Maybe even like call Rick, get some matchup principles within that zone, figure out how we can run that. But I'm a lot more comfortable playing a zone right now than man-to-man.
You're a big zone guy anyway. Like, you like zone programs because that's how you see yourself. So
100%. Yeah. Not a lot of foot speed out of me.
Yeah. We have back-to-back questions about the realistic coaches we'd like to see next year. I mean, you're a McMahon. Your boy's having a little bit of a rough go right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm sure we'll have an episode about this if and when Kenny's let go. And we'll kind of put our best foot forward. I mean, obviously, I was banging the drum for Mick, you know, when Kenny Payne got hired. That's who I wanted. And since then, he's had two Sweet 16s and a Final Four, lost on a last-second shot, should have been close to the finals. Anyways, that being said, yes, he's going through a rough patch, no doubt. Not the best timing for your boy here. But I'm looking at overall body of work. I'm sure Josh is, too. So he's a program builder. He built Cincinnati back up. He built UCLA back up. He installs culture. You know, I think he is what the program needs. I think now, with that being said, if we hit a home run, and I don't think we are, like, I need to stop saying Jay Wright because it's not going to happen. If we got like a Scott Drew, yes, I'm happy with that. If for whatever reason Billy Donovan, a miracle happened and he came, yes, I would be thrilled with that. But if I'm talking about realistic choices, And I know a lot of people hate on Mick. That's fine. I think he's a good coach. I think he'd do really good at this program.
I think, all right, everyone leaning close here. Everybody leaning close. It's just us talking. We can tell some secrets. This is where I like doing the podcast, because this is where we can spill some stuff, right? And the diehards can get a hold of it. I think Scott Drew's in play. I do. I think he's, there were conversations a couple years ago. I can tell you that. I think that he's more willing to listen this time. I know. Mick wants the job. Like Mick Cronin wants the job. Now, he's got the gigantic buyout that he didn't have a couple of years ago, which throws a little bit of a wrench into plans. They think there's a loophole in the contract based on the fact that UCLA is switching conferences. They think that is going to help. And there are some high-profile people in Louisville that I think want Mick to get the job. So those are two names that I would definitely expect to be in play if we are going to, go down this road. The only other thing that I've heard from somebody who would know, because, like I said, I hear a million things. There are only a couple of people out there that I really, really trust that have been proven track record over the years, is that Josh has his eyes on someone in the SEC, is all that I've heard. And that makes me happy, because there are a lot of good options in the SEC to choose from. You've got Nate Oates down there. You got Eric Musselman down there. Bruce Pearl, who would drive me crazy, but is certainly an option. Chris Beard has been talked a lot about amongst the UofL fan base. Like, there are names down there that would make sense. So those are three little tidbits there, just to chomp on that. We got, I'm sure, more to come.
Let me ask you this. Which coach from the SEC kind of strikes you the most?
Nate Oates.
Does he?
Yeah. I think he's brash. I like his system. I think he'd recruit better here. I think he wants to be in a spotlight program. He doesn't come with the baggage that some of the other guys that I mentioned do come with. I like Nate Oates. I know he hasn't proved it in the tournament yet, but look, he turned Alabama into a number one overall seed, for God's sake. Like, that's not the easiest thing in the world to do. I think, and look, he's not a guarantee. There are no guys besides, I think, Drew and maybe a couple others out there. You don't have people that have the proven track record that we knew Rick Pitino was going to win here because he'd won everywhere he went. Like, everybody else that we're looking at right now, you got guys that check a lot of boxes. You don't have guys that check every box. So there's going to be some guessing and some hoping with, I think, whoever the hire is, unless you are able to get, I think, Scott Drew. Like, he's done it. The one question now has become his teams the last couple of years. They don't have that same physical, tough-minded, defense first aura about them that they had when Jerome Tang was there. And now you're like, was it, how much of that was Tang and how much of that was Drew? And I think that there's a little bit of a question there, but still, the guy won a fucking national title at Baylor. I'm not gonna just gloss over that fact.
Baker, I mean, at this, like, we're Louisville. I mean, I feel like we've been through so much that, like, we're like, hey, like, we have to get this right. Like, we need to get our top tier guy. But, like, I'm so apathetic at this point. I'm like, I'll take anybody.
I know.
Get me somebody in here that can run a fluent offense and plays hard-nosed defense and has a plan in recruiting and a plan in the transfer portal. Just get me anybody.
It is crazy that, like, we're in such a different spot when it comes to that stuff than we were 2 years ago, where we were – I mean, we had guys and you and I – rolled our eyes at it and made fun of it. We had people that were like, Scott Drew's not good enough to be here. They're not better than Kenny Payne. And now we've gotten to such a low state as a program that I think people are like, anybody is a step up from where we are. You're like, hey, like, Kyle Smith at Utah. Like, don't know that much about him, but, like, he'd be okay. I mean,
could talk myself into Steve Forbes.
Yeah. I mean, I love Steve Forbes. He's not getting it done at Wake Forest right now. But, yeah, like, that's it's – we're definitely in a different spot than we were, for sure. It also is just, some of the things that people said a few years ago now look just insane in hindsight. But I think also, like, people keep saying, like, who would want to come coach here? For that reason alone, I don't think the Louisville job's ever been more attractive. Like, when could you ever be like you're a conquering hero if you come here and you go to the NCAA tournament in year one. That's never been the case with Louisville basketball before. It's hopefully never going to be the case with Louisville basketball again. If you flirt with the NCAA tournament next year, they'll let you be the fucking grand marshal of the Derby parade. Like, that's Who wouldn't want to be a part of that? We've got money, we've got resources, we've got a fan base, we're in the ACC, and you can, if you win, like, the bar is so low. Like, I would jump at the opportunity to come coach Louisville right now, for sure. Let's see. Terry says, since it's likely the end of KP's tenure at Louisville tonight, I need Mike and Danny to sing Silent Night.
That might come on the emergency podcast.
I did like somebody sent in the idea of like a Master P remix of make him say, but it's make him say nah, because you know you got to make him say no is the old joke with coaches. And I was the first thing that instantly came to my mind was y'all after big things, we after drum tangs.
Oh God! Oh,
stepping on toes, buying out Nate Oates. In a rebuild, anything goes. We could do this.
I mean, yeah, that's a pretty creative question. I like it.
Jeff says, is your daughter available to serve as interim coach? I like her pizzazz. Virginia Rutherford's got a lot of spunk.
That video was incredible. Like, she's Virginia Rutherford is going places. I know that.
If you haven't seen, we had her Christmas program at school yesterday. And, I mean, look. It's a huge church where they do this program, and you've got all the parents are there, you got grandparents there, you got relatives there. So like it's a huge setting for these like 3, 4, and 5-year-old kids. And so up there, like you've got all these kids that are just kind of like, some of them are just staring blankly. They're like, they're overwhelmed. Some are looking out in the crowd and kind of waving a little bit and smiling slyly. And then you've got Virginia front and center, she's doing curtsies. She's blowing kisses to the crowd. She's grabbing the microphone that's in front of her. Like she's doing spins. Like she's screaming. Like the girl, I would kill for 10% of her confidence level. I don't know where she came from, but she would not hesitate to take over this program for sure.
She's a star.
Ryan says, any concerns about football recruiting? I saw our classes ranked in the 50s right next to USF at ESPN. I mean, the thing is, you got to understand, this is the way that he's doing things now. Like he's not going heavy with the traditional recruiting. He's going heavy in the portal. He's like the guys that we're getting in the portal, those are next year starters that you're looking at. The guys that we're getting in these recruiting class, by and large, are guys that are, you know, maybe we'll see them in 2 or 3 years. A lot of them are probably going to be in the portal. It's just like that's the way that he's choosing. He feels like that's the best way to make Louisville consistently competitive, and that's the way that the program is going to be run, I think, for the foreseeable future.
Think about how hard it is to crack the top like 15 in recruiting if you're not one of those like national powers. It's there every year, like a Florida State or an Alabama or, you know, all the heavy hitters. Like, it is extremely hard from like a high school recruiting standpoint to crack that top 15, top 20. Yes, every once in a while there's like one off. So I think Jeff's doing the right thing. He's saying, hey, I think this is the way we can compete, is bring in proven guys in the transfer portal that are ready to play right away. And also, I mean, I like the recruiting class. I think I don't think anyone's knocking it. I mean, we didn't have that many recruits, but you know, I trust Jeff to bring in the guys that he thinks are going to develop into contributors.
Yeah, I mean, 14 players in this high school class. Some of them are still pretty highly touted. You know, we got JoJo Stone. We got a couple of high 3-star, low 4-star running backs. I know the staff loves Deuce Adams at quarterback. You've got some guys that could see the field pretty early on in their Cardinal careers. So I like the class. I like what they're doing in the portal, obviously. We may not have a chance to really talk about it in this podcast because we're running long already. But, my God, like 8 players in 72 hours and some of the biggest names in the portal. We've got the number one portal class at the moment right now, according to the On3 rankings. It's hard not to be really excited about what's happening here with the football program. And I'll say this, because we haven't really talked about it in depth at all. The more time goes on, the more that I like the Tyler Shuck, what we did with quarterback position, where it was like he's a value add. Like he's a guy that you got for, and this is the way you have to talk about these things in these terms now. Like, you paid less for Tyler Shuck than you would have for a guy like DJ Uiagalelei or the Howard kid from Kansas State or some of the other quarterbacks that we were after. And if he stays healthy, I think he's good enough to like make the throws that Jack Plummer couldn't make last year. And you're able to upgrade at other positions now. You get Thor Griffith, who's going to be a beast on the defensive line. You go out and get some secondary help. You get a couple wide receivers. Colin Lacey's the number one wide receiver in the portal. You land him. Like, I think that like they're gambling on Shuck staying healthy and not making some of the poor decisions he made at Texas Tech and being able to hit the throws that were out there all season long that Jack Plummer just couldn't. And I think it's a worthwhile gamble. And if he can't, look, you've got four other quarterbacks from last year's team that hopefully are going to get a lot better this offseason. I love the way that this roster is shaping up for next year.
No, 100%. He kind of, by signing Shuck, he was able to spread the wealth. I think Jeff was just dying to get some, not that we didn't have explosive players this year, but I do think like our two most explosive players were kind of hampered by injuries early. I think Jeff talked about that on his recent radio show. But I think he's just dying for big plays. And, you know, he's rolling the dice with someone who, as a quarterback, has been successful. But, obviously, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. So, to bring in what we did at receiver, beef up the line. I mean, geez, tight end. We went from kind of being sparse to it seems like we're going to be loaded at the tight end position. I'm excited for next year already.
I'm too. I'm very pumped. And we'll talk more about football on the next podcast. Obviously, basketball is dominating the conversation here, and we don't want this thing to go too long. So let's just, I guess we'll wrap it up with this. You're Louisville, Kentucky tonight, 6 o'clock. This is the first time in my lifetime where the actual game itself feels of secondary importance to what may happen after the game, but we will pick a winner here. How does this play out tonight? Obviously, it's going to be an awkward kind of environment inside the KFCM Center. A lot of blue. We're trying to do a red out tonight, which, my God, I don't know who thought that was a good idea. But it's going to be a bizarre night. It's going to be a weird night. How does the actual game go tonight, Dan?
I think it'll kind of just be a ho-hum game. Like, nothing too memorable about it. Kind of stays, like, in that 8 to 12 to 14 point range most of the game. If you're asking for a final score, I got Kentucky 77, Card 61.
I feel like, I think we're going to keep things unexpectedly close in the first half. Like, I feel like we go into the breakdown like 4 or 5 and everybody's kind of like, ooh, you know, this would be crazy. How funny would this be? This would be wild. He's coaching for his job. The players are playing for him. And then UK pulls away pretty early in the second half and then stays away. I'm going to say UK wins it by, I'll say 19. Let's go 81-62. And if you're asking for a prediction, this is not inside info. This is not like just whatever. I do think that we're doing another podcast in the next 48 hours talking about a coaching change and all that comes with it. So we'll see. It'll be an interesting night. It'll be an interesting day tomorrow, regardless of what happens. It'll be an interesting weekend. So keep your eyes and your ears, peeled. And maybe we'll be talking to you again very soon. Who knows? Until then, subscribe to the podcast. It's the best way to find out when new pods are available. Leave us a nice rating. Give us a good review. And we'll read those reviews on the next pod. We love you guys. Everyone's buckle up. Happy holidays. Happy UK game. Happy potential coaching search madness season. Whatever happens, let's stay together. We're all here for the same goal. We're going to get back eventually. It just may take a little bit. May take a little bit. Go Cards.
Pull up your pants, guys. Go Cards.